Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Welcome into episode 293 of the Sources Say podcast, your go-to Kentucky basketball and recruiting podcast on the growing KSR Podcast Network, presented by Justice Dental. Tonight, another very, very huge show, breaking down Kentucky's 96-88 overtime victory over St. Joseph's and some whispers about some potential big man news on the horizon. We will talk about all of that and more, but before we get started, a quick message from our friends at Justice Dental. Sources Say is presented by the great team at Justice Dental. Visit one of their two Lexington locations by scheduling an appointment online at justicedental.com or by calling or texting 859-543-0700. Dr. Thompson, Dr. Justice, and their team look forward to seeing you soon. I'm your host, Jack Pilgrim of Kentucky Sports Radio. Very happy to be finally joined by Sean Smith of Go Big Blue Country. An absolute disaster for 15 minutes. We were sitting here ready to go, and then the internet goes out, lighting's off, and music is in the background at the for whoever's at the restaurant right now. They're wanting to play music at the top of their lungs for God knows what reason, but we finally got all of those issues worked out and more, so we appreciate the patience. But Sean, the feeling that we're having right now about the blood pressure going high and the anxiety and the nervousness, that's literally what we dealt with last night at Rupp Arena. So I apologize that we had two straight nights of this feeling.
Listen, I was stressed to the max there for about 15, 20 minutes. One, the reason I'm at KS Office is because I have no power. So that wasn't getting restored and taken care of today. So the show has to go on. And it would have been hilarious if I would have had to do an episode from my car, but I'm trying to move on from that period of my life. So, of course, we have even more issues. But, hey, here we are. We're going to talk about what went down last night. And you mentioned the anxiety. Boy, Jack, I don't think at any point last night that I think Kentucky could even lose until they finally – St. Joseph's took the lead there late. And then it finally hit me. I was like, okay, this actually could go sideways here. But it didn't.
It didn't even set in with me that a loss was possible until that final made shot by St. Joseph's in the final minute. Did I ever think that a loss was on the table? Because they just continued to show that resolve, Sean. They had that response back. We knew what the scouting report was going to be on St. Joseph's. Like, that was a run and gun team. They were going to launch 33s, live or die by them. They made six in their loss against Texas A&M Commerce. They were going to continue to shoot 30, whether or not they fell. That's their style of play. They were going to try to beat you in that way. And they came in with that game plan and had a chance to beat Kentucky with that game plan. It was, you know, Cal always talks about the Super Bowl mindset with teams coming in. And it gets annoying and it gets like, yeah, well, we could say that about every non-conference schedule everywhere, every game. But how often is it that you get that type of shooting, all-around shooting performance? It wasn't just one guy. I mean, we had three different guys on St. Joseph's hit at least three threes, one guy hitting six on his own, another with five. How often is it that, Sean, that is the end? Because we've seen so many times that Kentucky loses that game. And for my money, Kentucky loses that game last year, and they lose it the year before, probably the year before that too. The resolve that this young, freshman-laden team showed on that stage, regardless of the opponent, it's still a very solid opponent, first and foremost. Like, I know that St. Joe's got a lot of crap on social media just because of the name St. Joe's, but like, that was always a very solid team, about as good of a mid-major opponent as you could get out of the A-10. Like, that's the type of non-conference opponent I wanted to face. And then you got the type of game that Kentucky needed to see. You said literally on the last show, Sean, I want to see how Kentucky adapts in a close game. What happens? We get an overtime masterpiece, quote unquote, where Kentucky ends up winning by eight. Exactly what you could look for in an A-10 victory, five games into the season.
Well, and you mentioned there a moment ago that they don't win that game a year ago. And I don't think they win that game a week and a half ago. if they hadn't had the moments that they went through against Kansas late down the stretch. I even said this this morning to someone that they needed what happened to them last night because you're going to be in a similar situation against Miami here in a week from tonight. It's going to be a tight ball game. They've gone through it now and they've won one. And that's just situations, Jack, that you can go over situational basketball in practice. You can put so much time on the clock, put one team up four or one team down four, and you can go over those and go over those and go over those. But until you're in that real pressure-packed environment, you don't really get it. It's on-the-court experience. That's the first time that Rupp Arena got to make an impact all season, and it did. It did late. Trey Mitchell and the guys talked about that after the game. And it's one of those things that did Kentucky do everything perfect in the final 5 minutes of regulation? No. Did they do everything perfect in overtime? No. Like there's still things and they're still figuring out how they want to play. And even Cal, like Antonio Reeves not on the floor there for a stretch late in regulation. The going back and forth between Reed Shepherd, do I put him on the floor? Do I not put him on the floor? It kind of goes hand in hand with what I said on Sunday that the biggest challenge is going to be you got so many guys that are capable, but what is the core group that closes games? I think it could shift and change depending on how guys are playing. And you're seeing that now. Like you've had different lineups and closing moments, but Kentucky was able to make plays late down the stretch to pick up a win against a team that was playing with house money, as John Calipari says. And Kentucky found a way to win. And even if had they lost, I told myself this morning, how would I have reacted if Kentucky had lost that game? I don't think I would have been negative because I still see what this team can be. But I woke up this morning feeling pretty good about what we saw down the stretch last night just because they had the resolve multiple times to just keep coming back and matching what St. Joseph's was doing as well.
That wasn't Evansville, you know, like that wasn't one of those in shoot by the end of the Evansville year, that team was in the conversation. I mean, they won the SEC outright and they were in the conversation to win it all before the season shut down. So you can lose ugly games like that and have that, oh no, you know, but you never want to face that reality of what that looks like. And I remember in the closing stretch of that Evansville loss, where I kind of had to like just take a step back and go, how do you react to this? How do you write about this? How do you go on social media and try to defend a loss to Evansville? You can paint the picture as beautifully as possible and try to say this, that, but at the end of the day, it's a loss to Evansville. And that was the reason why we still talk about the Evansville loss is because it was the Evansville loss. So I didn't want to face that with St. Joseph's. I think St. Joseph's is obviously better than Evansville, and I don't think people would have really connected those two, just the level of challenge that St. Joe's really was, especially with style of play and those things. But it just wasn't a reality that I was ready to face. That was something I just didn't want to speak into existence. I am grateful for Trey Mitchell in all three facets, his ability to hit the three at the end of the first half to kind of get the momentum at least your direction to start to going into the break. Then at the end of regulation, you're down one. And then he gets a putback dunk to a go ahead dunk to potentially win the game. It ends up being a tie game going into overtime. Thank Christ for missing that free throw. He had a lot of real ugly shots and, you know, big bruising matchup for Trey Mitchell that, you know, really presented a real challenge. Thank goodness that he missed that free throw at the end, but then Trey Mitchell opens up the overtime period with back-to-back threes. And again, what did we talk about on this show earlier in the season? That Trey Mitchell has been awesome. Everything that we have known and love about Trey Mitchell has been great. He has been the straw that stirs the drink with this group. That everything revolves around him from a stylistic perspective. But could he make the big shots? People that coached him in the past had told both of us individually that was the knock on him. It's like, yes, he's great against crappy non-conference competition. He could beat up against the lower tier guys, but could he raise to that level? Could he be that guy to lean on at the end of games? He was solid against Kansas. Didn't play great, missed some crunch time free throws. That stunk, but he still had a very solid all-around game. He follows it up when the team needs him to put him put, you know, have him on their back, he did it. And he made one play at the end of regulation, one play at the end of overtime, and then two in the overtime period to essentially seal the game and give the Cats the cushion. I appreciate his resolve more than anybody.
Yeah, I do too. And he has been incredible. And the more that I dive into numbers and just what he's accomplishing, and you know, Cal mentioned it earlier in the season here. He's like, it blew Cal's mind that he had never had a positive assist to turnover ratio at any point in his career. The only time that he did was 2020-21, 2.2 assists, 2.2 turnovers. But look at that. I tweeted that last night. Only two turnovers in 178 minutes of play. And on top of that, Jack, get this. I was digging through some stats before we went live, and Trey Mitchell is tied for eighth in the country in assist-to-turnover ratio. He is the only player in the top 25 in Division I men's college basketball that is not a guard with those numbers. Like, how impressive is that? And you're seeing the three-point shot, too. Like, that was the thing. He hadn't taken many in the regular season. And then last night, it comes down to it, right? So how does Kentucky want to play late? I still don't think we really know, even though they pulled that game out last night. Yeah, they went floppy action to Rob Dillingham, and he put him up a shot, you know, rattled in or fell in and got it to drop. There was one possession where they're trying to get some pin downs to kind of get right back into that same look, and then DJ Wagner just gets downhill and goes and scores. And I'm going to talk about that in a minute, because it wasn't even DJ that I noticed. It was something else about the tape today that I watched that we'll get into. But then you start OT with some middle ball screens, some pick and pop looks for Trey Mitchell. That was where they got the separation. That was where they won the basketball game, was those two shots. Maybe it's playing some middle ball screen with him and DJ or him and one of these other guards. You at least have some tape now and some success in late game situations that now you can start piecing that stuff together. But I still don't think Cal 100% really knows where he wants to go late in games. I looked at him late, and he kind of was like – and that's not a knock on Cal. That is the part of this that he has to learn, too, with this group. Not every team is the same. Is it Antonio Reeves that we want to play through late? Is it getting a post touch? Is it because Trey Mitchell just requires so much attention and can see the floor? I loved what they did to open the OT, though, with the ball screen action. That's where I think it's going to be. And I also think DJ Wagner, he gets to the paint. He finds the paint and touches it. And when he touches it, you can have Antonio Reeves and these other guards play off that. Kentucky did get some things answered, but you're going to have to see it the next time they're in that situation. What are some things that they go to? And that'll be something that just builds throughout the season.
Well, let's talk about that, because DJ was obviously such an important part of that. Hit a lot of those dagger shots, had the one to potentially win it at the end of regulation. Was not probably the shot you're looking for, but kind of showing that mental that confidence that we the mentality that we saw in high school that we had been kind of questioning to start his career here. Where did that go? He has always been the guy that just attack, get downhill, I'm gonna punch you in the mouth mentality. He just really hadn't played with that level of aggressiveness and in, you know, fading away on his shots, going left instead of, you know, creating with both hands, just not playing with that same level of oomph that we're used to seeing with him. And we got to see that. It wasn't a perfect performance, 7 of 17 shooting, 1 for 4 from 3, but 22 points, 7 of 8 from the free throw line, six assists, 3 rebounds. He was terrific. He had that, as you talked about, that one play in particular that I think was probably the most polarizing of the game, because yes, he did dribble it out for 25 seconds and finish with his left hand at the basket, where he had been missing very regularly. Like, we've been talking about it. Why is he so reliant on his left hand? Why is he not exploding with both and trying to look to create with both? He kind of been falling back on that, and it felt like he was falling back on that shot that hadn't been working through, you know, through four games. And then in the fifth, why are you looking for that to potentially seal the game? But he hit it. What can you say about that play and just the, you know, what it meant, how it unfolded? Because on first take, it did not appear that that's what Kentucky was looking for. Because it kind of became a controversial play on Twitter today, especially because they saw the shot clock left and the finish at the rim. My concern was the nervousness at the top of the key that you kind of see where he's kind of looking around going, oh no, oh no, oh no, nothing's happening. I'm not seeing it. And then the go was the successful part, but the hesitant in the, okay, nothing around me is happening. How sustainable is that was my concern in the heat of the moment. But at the end of the day, it was a dog making a dog play. And it essentially gave Kentucky the win.
So they were up 4 when that happened, right? And then the basket put them up 6.
Yes.
So there was a similar situation there in regulation where they're up 4. Rob Dillingham has a breakaway layup. He doesn't make it. Kentucky has a chance to come up with an offensive rebound. Instead, it leads to a bucket the other way. That's a massive 4-point swing that kept St. Joe's in it and eventually put it in overtime. So Kentucky comes through in a fashion that you didn't want. That's not what you want. Cal doesn't want that. That's where I'm saying that you find out late in games, the game slows down. You're playing at this quick pace, 100 miles an hour, random basketball, but in the final five, it's always going to slow down, and it becomes a grinded out game. And Cal is going to have to figure out how they want to grind things out. But you know what started the go to the rim for DJ Wagner?
Like what, a time, like the time, or what do you mean?
Tyler Ulis.
Ooh.
Go back and watch the clip. Tyler Ulis stands up on the bench and is almost on the floor screaming at him to just go. And then when he went and finished, it was Tyler that was really fired up. And when I saw that on tape today, I was like, that's a Tyler Ulis play. That's a things are going sideways here. I've just got to go make a shot. And seeing DJ rise to the moment in that moment, and Cal is talking about it, don't be afraid of the moment. It's not how you draw it up. You don't ever want to see that again, but it showed you that Kentucky has dudes. And I was talking to you last night at halftime about DJ wanting to get to that right shoulder. He is a right shoulder driver. Like, he loves to get to that right shoulder. Like, we're seeing that right now and try to finish with that left hand. Just to have the presence of mind to do it and not try to force a pass to Rob or to somebody there and just going and making a play. I thought that was encouraging to see. But go back and watch that clip. Might have some people watching it while we're watching this, but you see Tyler Ulis stand up on the bench and he's screaming for him just to go.
I think you hit the nail on the head, because that 25-second runoff is not sustainable where there's no off-ball movement, there's no creation there, and the panic, that's what I said. The panic, temporary panic in his eye was what concerned me, that in the moment we're like, what are you doing? What's the play here? What's the vision? I'm not seeing it. And that's where we panicked, sitting there at Rupp Arena going, are we about to choke this? Like, are we going to have this slip between our fingers? And then DJ go makes the play. Is that sustainable against 7-foot long athletic bigs in the SEC? What's going to happen when people do collapse on him and there is the length to bother him in that way, the way we had seen him earlier in the season? That's the kind of, okay, it's a good moment. I love it. I am so glad that he's breaking through, because we talked about on the show, this team goes as DJ Wagner goes. You have to have him be the threat that he is to have a legitimate shot to make the run, to reach the dreams that we have for this team. DJ Wagner has to be DJ Wagner. There is no ifs, ands, or buts around it. And that was a DJ Wagner play. That's why you go fight tooth and nail for him during his recruitment and basically say, yeah, I don't care about family connections. I don't care about this. I don't care about location. I don't care about anything. I'm going to get DJ Wagner on my roster. That's why you sign him. But the dribble it out for 30 seconds and just hope that he's going to finish that every single time, let's not make that our go-to. Let's continue to do what had been working for 36 minutes of regulation, Sean. That's what I liked.
And it's tough, though. Like, it's really tough to – and this is where just a natural thing within the game is possessions are going to become crunched late. And then it comes down to two things. How do you execute in the half court, and how do you defend on the other end of the floor? You got to execute on your end of the floor with the ball, and you have to get stops. They're connected. They're intertwined in winning basketball in the final 4 or 5 minutes of games. And right now, Kentucky knows what it wants to do and how it wants to play for 35 to 36 minutes. It's that final four that they're not really sure how they want to play. And that's where it becomes very important about where you want to get the basketball. And I think DJ Wagner is going to be a very important piece to that as this season goes along. And you saw it last night. But to me, like, we're 20 minutes in here. We've not even talked about Reed Sheppard. And we literally titled a podcast over the weekend, the Reed Sheppard game. That in itself, we've not even got into Rob Dillingham. Those reasons right there, Jack, are why I have been so high on what this team can be. And you're going to hear me say it the rest of November, December, January, February, March, and into April. It's the way that it's a different guy every single night. Reed has had his moment. Rob has had his moments. Antonio is scoring the basketball at a high clip. DJ had his moment last night. So they've not all played well on the same night. But that's the beauty of having so many guys that can do this at this level. You can overcome somebody not having their best night offensively. And then how are you impacting the game when you're not scoring? Reed made an impact last night defensively. How about this with him? 17 steals on the year. That is two ahead of the pace of Rajon Rondo's single-season record at UK. Not saying that Reed's going to break that record. It's worth at least noting. Because he's ranked fourth in the country in steals right now. Reed Sheppard does. He's making an impact.
What did you team high plus 16 in the plus minus, by the way, that Cal continued to go back to that 0 points, just one shot attempt. But he did do that. And he also had four rebounds, four assists in 25 minutes. What about that the team defender comments from Cal that he talked about where – you know, he had some slip ups on ball. Like there were times that when Reed wasn't playing in the second half and people were going, where the hell is Reed Sheppard? There was a valid reason for it because he did have a lot of defensive miscues that kind of led to a, you know, we kind of got to keep rolling with what's working. And right now Reed isn't necessarily that guy. That changed down the stretch and he converted on that. And he, you know, came up with some of the biggest stops of the game, especially there in that overtime period to seal it. But what about that difference between the team defense and the on-ball defense where we did kind of see some slip-ups there, Sean?
Yeah, and the way that St. Joe's plays offense and the threes that they were taking, I mean, Kentucky was getting caught in a lot of scrambles and things and some closeouts. And it wasn't just Reed. Like there were guys all night that were making mistakes and just kind of maybe getting a little lazy for 2 or 3 seconds and getting bad positioning, turning their back to their man or turning their head. And then it was putting Kentucky in a bind with some closeouts. And then not only that, but St. Joe's had to make the shots, and they did. But then Kentucky came back down the other end, Jack, and did what? They made a shot. And that's where you saw a young team grow up in that moment last night. And in Reed's game, to me, I was glad that he got back on the court and made plays. He had a couple of steals last night that he instantly turned back over, which was uncharacteristic of him. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe for a brief moment, he got a little sped up in his mind with maybe just being indecisive of what he wanted to do. But that's okay. Like, he still made an impact. Five steals is five steals. Like, there's no way to really talk too negative about what he did. And Cal, the hug for him after the game, and then, you know, the press conference and stuff, you know, talking about Reed and everything. Like, there's going to be ups and downs with all these guys. And that's what I was getting to a moment ago, is that Reed was the talk of the press conference along with Rob on Friday night. Well, last night it was DJ's turn to get some of the praise while others. And like, this team is so together that I don't think that they really care about who's on the floor or who's getting the shots. I mean, he attempted one shot. He's 12 of 18 from three this season. He just knocked down 7 threes on Friday, and he comes out and takes one shot, but still made an impact on winning. They need those. That's the thing. Stay engaged even if you're not scoring the basketball.
And that Trey Mitchell talked about that after the game. He said, we don't care about roles. Like, we're not a team that sits there and counts minutes for each of us. We're not going to say, oh, well, Rob and Reed aren't starting tonight, so they're not starters. Like, they see all seven of those rotation guys as starters, like that starter level talents, while Jordan Burks is going in there and battling his butt off too. Like, got to work on his hands, dude. Got to figure out how to catch that ball when he's getting to the right spots and he's in position to finish in traffic, and you know, he's where he's supposed to be. But my man, we got to catch the ball. Like, we got to figure out how to kind of get out of your head and just finish the easy plays. Like, you're capable. You averaged almost 30 points a game in high school as a senior. Like, you're capable. We know you finished that. Get out of your head a little bit. But he is contributing. He's battling. I appreciate his efforts for sure. But that mindset, and obviously when the bigs come back, and we'll talk about that. I know everybody wants to know what's the latest with those two. I'm here to tell you it's not as drama-filled as I think people are hoping it is. It never has been, and I don't think it's going to be something that there's like this aha moment coming up in the next couple of days. But Trey Mitchell singling that out and saying, we do not care about roles. We don't care about if this guy has X number of minutes or shots or whatever. And then when you look at the actual numbers themselves, it reflects that. Look at this shot chart. 6, 6, 15, 9, 17, 10, 1. And Reed being your 1. That's a guy that we have seen take 10. Like, that's the balance is there. The three-point balance is there. And as you pointed out, and Cal continues to talk about it during his media conversations. He talked about it again during his call-in radio show. 5 different players with at least 3 assists. I mean, that's a big number. 2 of them with 6. DJ and Rob both with 6. That's important. Like, that, there is so much balance and ebbs and flows with this team. It just the chemistry and cohesion is absolutely ridiculous for this stage. And we haven't even gotten to see the finished product yet. We saw this team so far advance, finish games in ways that you would expect them to in February. They're doing it November 20th. Like, that just doesn't happen. And Sean, that's where you can start dreaming big, because the last 3 years, Kentucky does not win this game. And we saw them lose this game against Evansville. So, like, there is a precedent set where Kentucky has lost some of these early games where it is the Super Bowl.
And it wasn't just Evansville. I mean, it's multiple games that they've lost over the last few years, even against quality opponents. When it comes down to, you know, having to crunch and string together possessions late, when you got to get stops and you got to make shots, like, it's do or die in the final 4 minutes of games. But you saw them come away with it. And to me, you know, you mentioned Cal continuing to say that it will not shock me if that becomes his new trend thing here for the next couple of weeks. Is he, every time he talks, he said, we have this many guys getting this many assists. I saw that statistic last night, and I was actually going to ask him about something else. My question was going to be, you know, he mentioned that they needed to close games better, but it was something that young teams learn. I was going to ask him what he learned about his team. And then I saw that number and I was like, I'm going to take this here because I think he's going to appreciate this stat. And I think it stuck with him. Clearly, because he talked about it again tonight on radio. But when you look at these close games, Jack, that victory, whether it's by what the margin have been, 8? All right, it's 8 in overtime, or if it's 25, it's not going to look any different on Selection Sunday. The only way it was going to look any different is if it had been a loss. But what Kentucky got from an overtime win against a team that probably a lot of people didn't expect to be in that moment to have a chance to win on the road at Kentucky, up 1 with a few seconds to play, under a minute to play. I'm not saying I want that to be Marshall on Friday night, because I don't. No, let's not go through that again.
Beat him by 30, please, for the love of God.
We just went through it. But had Kentucky won that game by 20, they wouldn't have learned anything, really. It had just been the same thing that we've been seeing from this team.
And it really
through the fire of that stretch. And that's what is going to be meaningful in March.
And it really was just – it was awesome basketball. I mean, it was a 96-88 finish. We saw St. Joseph's hit the most ridiculous, like, okay, come on, bro. Like, at some point, they got to get cold. There's no way they're going to continue to shoot at this rate. But you saw Kentucky do the exact same on the other end. You saw good basketball, good fundamentally sound basketball, where for 36 minutes, I thought it was unbelievable offense, just, you know, great offense on the other end. You got to, you know, hit some walls or whatever. But we are game five, Sean. Like, this is their ability. And what I also appreciated when they did hit a couple of those little cold stretches, that's when they converted on the stops on the other end. So they had that mental makeup to kind of bounce back and forth of, okay, we're cruising offensively. Let's keep riding this hot hand. But when they knew they had to lock in and make a stop because it's not working on the other end and they're starting to creep back a little bit, or, you know, took an early lead, that's when they started kind of putting together kills. And that's what led to the reversal of lead and led to the ultimate win. You don't get a better resolve victory than this. And it's like, if Kansas was a moral victory, and I hate using that phrase because it's Kentucky basketball, we don't have moral victories, but it's as close as you can get. What would that version of moral victory be for this? Because you did get the victory, so you don't have to say it's a moral victory, but it does feel like the meaning behind the win was more impactful than the 8-point margin of victory over St. Joseph's. How they did it felt much more impactful than the actual result itself.
It was another step along the journey, is what it was. The journey to wherever this team goes and their story. And when it comes down to it, and I think I may have touched on this earlier, if they're in that situation next Tuesday night against a good Miami team at Rupp Arena that has good guards, that they're going to shoot it and things, and they're going to test Kentucky. And that's a top 10 team that's going to be entering the building because they don't play again. Their last game was Sunday. They don't play again until next Tuesday. They've got some time off here. Going through what they went through, though, and finally winning a game. And they've not had many. They've only had two situations where that was what they were in, where they had to close teams out. And it was kind of the similar situation. They had a lead late, give it up, they force OT, and then they made the shots down the stretch to win it. Doing that in that moment against that opponent gives me confidence that when they get in that situation against Miami, a better basketball team, Kentucky will be even better prepared to go to win that game. Had they not won that one last night, I wouldn't have as much confidence in them doing it against a quality opponent. But having done it and building the confidence to know that they can, I don't think you're going to see any nerves in those situations at some point. But I think I said Reed Shepherd was fourth in the country in steals. He's actually third. But here's another statistic that we've not really hit on that has been very important given their lack of front court depth. Kentucky is fourth in college basketball in fouls per game. 12.2 fouls per game. Foul trouble has not been an issue for this team.
What a statement for Trey Mitchell, like, considering he just had a 9-foot, 480-pound monster in this most recent matchup, and then you have Hunter Dickinson, who's basically the same damn thing. Like, it's not like he's been going up against 6'7" wings. Like, he's been playing out of position and balling. Like, Trey Mitchell, man, that's the one guy that I had this conversation for the game with somebody who knows Trey well. You know, just talking about the fit and, you know, how he's working. And I said, I think Trey's the most impactful player on the team. They were like, well, I think Rob's that player. I think Rob has been, and I said, well, I think Rob's the most talented player. I think he's proven to be the most talented player. I think the best all-around player has been Reed Shepherd thus far, but I think the most impactful player, bar none, has been Trey Mitchell. And I think you could say definitively those three players, given those individual traits, most talented Reed, or most talented Rob, most impactful Trey, best all around Reed. I think that's pretty fair for the early accolades, which there you can kind of make arguments for all of them for all three. But I think it's pretty fair to say those three guys this season is a whole heck of a lot different to start the year if they aren't playing the way they are.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And we know the value of Trey Mitchell. Like, we saw it ahead of time, but you're really seeing it now. 148 minutes, is that what my tweet said? Two turnovers? Mm-hmm. Like, he's playing a ton of minutes. I think he's 50th or 51st in the country in minutes played right now. And when and this team as a whole and a complete unit is not turning the basketball over. Like they finished with 9 again last night. And I think 6 of those were at the half, right? Didn't 3 of those happen in the final 25 minutes?
Yep.
Of play? Like so even though it was a pressure-packed moment, they're not coughing it up. And a couple of those were uncharacteristic of Reed getting steals and then trying to make a play and turning it over. Like, I'm not worried about Reed Sheppard taking care of the basketball. That's something that is probably the least of my worries with anything with this team. But you're just seeing, like, there's just such good basketball happening right now for this team. And they're so far along from where a lot of people thought that they were going to be. They're doing a lot of stuff. They're hitting threes. So last night, they entered that game averaging 30 and a half three-point attempts per game. They didn't shoot that number last night. I think they shot 25. But they got to their average number of makes, and that ended up being the difference in the game. They got to 12. They were averaging an 11 and a half makes per game entering last night. So even though they didn't get the volume and the numbers that they had been attempting getting to that 30, they made it and shot a better percentage, and they needed every single one of them. If Kentucky's not hitting threes and not shooting the basketball the way that they are early in the season, they lose that game by 15-plus last night the way St. Joe shot the ball. And I'm also willing to bet that 85 to 90% of college basketball, maybe even more, loses that basketball game last night. That's the confidence.
15 main threes. I mean,
might even push it a little bit higher, especially if you take out an team's entire front court. Like, Kentucky had to match it because right now they don't have the presence in the paint. They don't have the guy that's playing above the rim and just dunking everything or the big that's cleaning up stuff at the rim or affecting the game. They're having to win in a way that we've never seen Kentucky basketball win. 3 players get 20 points last night. First time that's been done. How crazy is this? First time that's been done at Kentucky since 2009, 2010, when John Wall, Patrick Patterson, and DeMarcus Cousins did it against Sam Houston State. To think of all the guys that have come through this program in 14 to 15 years, and that has not happened more than twice, is insane. But it just goes to show you the balance of scoring, the balance of assist, everything coming together, the way this team wins. Top 15 in the country in fast break points, 20 points per game in transition, shooting the crap out of the ball from 3, getting up and down the floor and scoring in transition. One thing that does need to improve, you got to make some free throws. And Trey Mitchell, that is surprising to me that his free throw percentage is what it is. He's missed some free throws. That is the one area of his game that I think he needs to improve on moving forward. He shoots it too well from 3. Does everything else too well. That number's got to get better. I believe it might be around 61% right now, but I think he's got 6 misses in there.
Yeah, and crucial ones and untimely ones. So, yeah, that's got to
– And I do miss some too. So, you got to hit those.
Those are 2 in a row. That was awful. That's got to get better. You had your favorite stat. I have mine. 2 Kentucky teams have scored at least 81 points in each of their first 5 games. This one and 92-93, that team winning 30 games, making a Final Four and averaging 87.5 points per game. This is all of the stuff we've talked about them taking care of the ball, scoring well in transition, making shots, all of the incredible offensive analytics. They're passing all those tests with flying colors, and they're averaging 90 points a game. Like, 90 points a game, one of those games being against the number 1 team in the country, another one of those, St. Joseph's, a very solid team that gave you 15 threes. Like, they just think of where we were last year talking about where does the shot creation come from? How are we, the archaic offense, it was the phrase thrown around ad nauseum. And think of where we are now, where we're just drooling over this offense right now. And the only time that we ever kind of get pissy about it is when we go grind, stall ball, grind it out at the end of the games, which Cal said both tonight and last night, I'm going to continue to grind it out because this team also needs to learn how to win those games, which I agree with. Like, you don't want to see it because this is fun and exciting. And, you want them to score, you want them to score 800 points a game. That's great. But they also do need to know how to win in that style, because there are going to be teams that try to bog things down and force them into the half court. And you got to be able to figure out how to win in that way. And that's how they won. They did not win in overtime by playing the run and gun, you know, running a bunch of ridiculous actions and playing random basketball. They won by playing fundamentally sound basketball and making crunch time shots. Like, that's impactful. But that stat, man, 92-93, everybody talks about that being one of the most fun basketball teams. Rick Pitino, you know, Rick Pitino's baby, you know, winning 30 games, Final Four, 87.5 points. This team's already topping that. I mean, they got the goods. Rebounding has to get better. That will happen once the bigs get back. And that was talked ad nauseum as well. Even tonight, Cal was saying, yeah, looking at the tape, the rebounding, we regressed a little bit. They said that both him and Orlando Antigua talked about that they had been better in leading up to this the season and rebounding. They're kind of let down, even considering the circumstances, them being so thin in the front court. What do you think about that number? They want every guard to have 5 rebounds. They want that to be the number for them. You got to gang rebound. Got to, you know, that also allows them to get out in transition because, you know, it takes out one less pass. They're already out in transition that way. That's part of it. They want to keep that pace high.
You have to do it all by committee. Like, everything is all hands on deck right now with this basketball team. You got to defend as a team. You have to rebound as a team. The balance and assist that I've been talking about, that's by committee too. I mean, you're talking multiple dudes getting assist and the assist number at a high clip. And that goes hand in hand with knocking down shots. If Kentucky's shooting the ball well, they're going to have a high number of assists, especially from three. So I do think that is something that you're kind of – and here's the part where it helps you. If you get that mindset right now that you have to go grab 3 or 4 rebounds apiece, and I think Antonio Reeves has been doing a much better job, you know, grabbing some rebounds and stuff. I know he had a lot there. I think it might have been the game before. But if you're doing it now, when a big does return, you still have that same mindset because you're trained to do it. And that just makes Kentucky a more complete and better rebounding team here when they do have some size on the interior to go along with it. So all these things that you're seeing Kentucky have to pay more attention to the details to win right now is going to make this team even better and stronger and more prepared when they do get the size back. Kentucky has not used it as a crutch or as an excuse that they don't have a 7-footer right now. They have just lined up and played you and went right at you. They've taken teams' best shots, and they've come away victorious 4 out of 5 times. And I know, like, some of these games, yeah, the competition's not the best, but they did go wire-to-wire with #1 Kansas. Kentucky, to me, is the most impressive team in college basketball to date because of the way that they're winning, the number of guys that are making impacts. People want to talk about freshmen, up and down freshmen. So what? You've got a plethora of guards here that are young, and it's been someone different every single night. The chances of all those guys playing poorly on the same night, unlikely. And somebody asked me yesterday, or actually today, when do you think Kentucky peaks? NCAA tournament. You know why? Because you're never going to see these guards play well on the exact same night because it's going to be up and down of a freshman season. When you get to that tournament, they're all going to be the best version of themselves, and I think that's when it starts to click and they all play well. And when they do, you better hang on for dear life because this team's coming right at you. And that they're going to be hard to handle.
Yeah.
If you can't tell, I like my team.
I love my team, and I loved our parlay picks, Sean, the last two games. We've been so close, man. The first one I hit, I hit the Kansas one, passed that one flying colors. You were 2 rebounds away against Trey Mitchell, which that's going to happen. Like, unfortunately, the gang rebounding and the guards needing 5 rebounds a game, it that ended up hurting you with our parlay. But we've been, I'm not going to lie, we've been really getting, you know, right there in the mix. I felt really good about Kentucky winning that game against St. Joe's and, you know, pulling away late. I had the 14.5, but they weren't able to convert, obviously, still got it to 8 there at the very end. But we're having a lot of fun with FanDuel. The NBA in college basketball seasons are back. Join FanDuel, America's #1 sports book. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets with any $5 winning money line bet. That's $150 if your team wins. If you've been thinking about joining FanDuel, there's no better time to get in on the action. The app is so easy to use. There are a wide range of betting options, including spreads, player props, which we have hit very, very extensively, overs, over-unders, and more. We're having a blast with it. We went 3-2, I believe, on this past week, and one of the misses was 14.5 for Kentucky, which I still felt very good about that one, and I'm going to continue to feel good betting on Kentucky, especially the overs and unders. You know, they've been absolutely crushing those overs. We got to just kind of make that a staple until they prove us wrong, to just kind of keep nailing that, because the pace and tempo and scoring output that they're getting, Sean, I mean, you just can't beat it.
No, you can't. And if you play all those as singles, last night you would have come out, you know, ahead. We had three win, we had two losers, and then even the Champions Classic, we had four picks win and one off. But last night, I think I had Morehead State plus 4.5, and they ended up winning by 13. And then Dalton Connect got over his scoring total and then in the first half, and then thankfully, because he missed the entire majority of the second half with cramps. So the one that missed for me last night, which one missed for me? I'm trying to think of what all I played out there last night, what I put out. Oh, the over in Purdue and Gonzaga. Those are the tough lines early in the season, because, I mean, obviously, you know, Purdue is – and KenPom is KenPom right now. I'm not putting a ton of stock in it. I want to see a few more weeks of basketball, but Purdue and Tennessee right now in a game. I don't know what that score currently is, but that's two of the better defensive teams in KenPom early in the season.
Yeah, and Connor Riggs, right.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Can we get some Reed and Rob props on FanDuel? That's been the one thing I've been missing. I've loved to be able to bet on my guys and trust in them, but I also trust in Rob. I trust in Reed. I want to be able to do that. So if you're listening, FanDuel, let's make that happen. Let's make sure we get Reed and Rob lines in there. But we're having a blast with it. We appreciate that partnership. So visit FanDuel.com/Pilgrim. That is FanDuel.com/Pilgrim. FanDuel, official partner of the NFL, 21 and over, and present in Kentucky. First online real money wager only. $5 pregame money line wager required. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. While we're at it, Sean, Source Day Podcast is also brought to you by Andy Ludeke and MyPerfectFranchise.net. Andy is a franchise consultant as well as franchise owner and helps people find franchises that fit their skill sets, financial requirements, time to commit, and more. His services are 100% free, and he is here to help. If you have any questions about business ownership, you can learn more and contact Andy anytime at www.MyPerfectFranchise.net. And Sean, while we're at it, this is a team that you want to go see in person. There's no reason for you to not see them in person. And I think for the first time, their ability, you know, the Rupp Arena fan base's ability to take that game over and really make it to the level that you expect made me think of one and only thing: game time. There's no reason why your butts should not be in these seats helping Kentucky cross the finish line, helping them in overtime. You shouldn't have to worry when you're buying tickets. Now isn't the time for guesswork with killer last-minute deals, all-in prices, views from your seat, and the best price guarantee. Game Time does all the hard work for you. Game Time has deals on tickets right up to the start of the event. And even an hour after it starts, it's the place to find last-minute seats, find exclusive flash deals, and sponsor deals on tickets for football, basketball, baseball, concerts, comedy, theater, and more. With zone deals, you pick the section, and Game Time picks the seats for an average of 18% savings. And the Game Time guarantee means that you will always get the best price if you find tickets in the same section and row for less. Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. Sean, I am seeing with my own two eyes that they're open seats, which means you guys are not taking advantage of Game Time the way you need to. Those upper end zone seats, they're available. And we need that extra pop against Marshall on Friday. I know everybody's going to be full from their turkey on Thanksgiving. I know it's going to be a little bit sluggish on Friday. Wake up, get that morning Black Friday energy rush and just take that on into Friday night using game time where you can have a great time and will Kentucky to victory and across the finish line against Marshall.
Yeah. Yeah. Rupp Arena was great down the stretch last night. It would be even better if those seats were full. And I'm looking forward to that first big time game in Rupp Arena here a week from now with Miami, which you can also find tickets for on the Game Time app as well. So be sure to use Game Time and get in there and have the same view that Jack and I have of these Cats. If you've not made it out to watch them, get out and watch them.
I mean, the seats right now are ridiculous. I'm doing a flash deal right now. I mean, you can get as close as imaginable for $200, $48, $49, $53 all in after fees, all that good stuff. I mean, you can't beat that deal. Go there, be there, a part of the experience, and see the Cats score 90 points a game and hit 12 threes and have a good time. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code KSR for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account, redeem code KSR for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. All right, I know everybody wants to know about Aaron Bradshaw. Everybody wants to know about what the deal is there. I know there's some talk about him potentially returning soon. This, Sean, was the timeline where, like, the public talk of, you know, I'm hearing the Marshall date. Like, that was the where it started with AB on of where we could officially start talking about his return to the season. I'll let you know that I have heard to not expect him for Marshall. I think that's fool's gold. I would not get myself excited for that. I would even be very cautious about Miami. I know it'd be a great, you know, great matchup for him to kind of get, you know, throw him right there in the fire, see how he works out. But I would caution patience with him. Here's the good news. He's coming back soon. Like, I know there was a report from Davis Sisk tonight. Great. I mean, one of my very good buddies, trust him with everything. He's awesome. He talks to the right people, and I know his stuff is good. He said that he's returning. The expectation is that he returns to practice tomorrow. I have heard that he has already been in practice doing ramp-up things. He has not participated in full 5-on-5 yet, and I don't know if that's even going to be the case tomorrow yet, but he has already been an active part of practice, Sean, which is a great thing. Like, he is there. Like, we can officially start talking about Aaron Bradshaw as a part of this roster and kind of tinkering with what that looks like. Now, this isn't Toronto where it's like, you know, out of sight, out of mind. We don't even have to factor him in. You can officially start piecing together what Aaron Bradshaw on this team looks like, which is awesome. He's a great player, great kid who has been itching to get back on the floor. I've heard nothing but unbelievable things. The one thing that I have heard is it is going to take time for him to see the best version of Aaron Bradshaw. So please do not expect if he comes in for that December 2nd game, if he comes in and makes his appearance for the first time in that Penn game, that homecoming game in the Northeast where he has friends and family in town, do not expect him to play 35 minutes and score a bunch of points, grab a bunch of rebounds, and be this total game changer from day one. He has missed a lot of time on the floor, Sean. He has not played a competitive game since the spring. It's going to take, I mean, you and I both know how long that takes just to be in game shape, to be there. He's there. I mean, he's getting close. He feels good, but just understand it will be a process no matter when he makes his first official check-in. It's going to be a minute. Be patient, but we can officially start talking about Aaron Bradshaw as a realistic part of this rotation.
We can, and here's my take on it, and probably some people won't agree with me with this, but if he wasn't able to get on the floor by Marshall or maybe even like a game last night, I just don't think it's the best moment to bring him back against Miami in a game where I think Kentucky needs to be locked in, dialed in. They're comfortable playing the way that they are right now. So get through that date. And then you get him back for some of these other games where I think that you can give a little bit more run, right? And you can be a little bit more, not necessarily relaxed, because you can't relax in college basketball. We saw that last night. We saw that across the country. But the first big game in my mind for Aaron Bradshaw is North Carolina in Atlanta. That is where I'm kind of zoning in and looking. Not as much Miami. To me, it would have been Miami if you could have got him back by Stonehill. But there needs to be a transition here to where you don't want to run the – I mean, and I don't think Cal's going to do this, especially right off the bat. But I'm not concerned about chemistry issues, but with what Kentucky's doing right now, I think Kentucky's good enough as is in the moment to go beat Miami at Rupp Arena a week from now. And then you go in after that and start getting to be your best version with him back.
And that's Kentucky's take. That is the mindset that this program has right now. Had the wheels fallen off very early and they get curb stomped against Kansas and you're starting to look at, oh, good Lord, things are really ugly with this team. We got to figure things out, you know, right now before the wheels really fall off. Then you could start talking about, all right, AB, let's figure this out. We got to get you on the floor. But if it ain't broke, don't fix it. That's the mindset that they have right now. And understand, I need fans to understand that this is a 7'2", versatile, shot-making, face-up, athletic big man with a broken foot. This is not a kid dealing with a tight hamstring. This is not a kid with an ankle sprain trying to just walk it off. Like, this is a kid with a broken foot. Bigs with broken feet, it's like the ultimate polarizing injury situation in the NBA. Like, there are some teams that look at that injury and say, no, no go. I'm not touching a 7-footer with foot injuries ever. I'm not messing with it. So understand that there's a lot of trust with this on Kentucky's side. And that's something that I think fans are missing when they're quick to judge Aaron Bradshaw and his family and saying, you know, he's being selfish. He's just holding out for the sake of holding out. Understand that there's a lot at stake with Aaron Bradshaw and his future as a basketball player, not just for Marshall on Friday night. Like, this is a long, long, long-term play that is very calculated. Like, they're not just blindly making decisions with Aaron Bradshaw right now, Sean. They know what they're doing. This has been a very calculated timeline for return. Just because not everything has been made public doesn't mean that they're not working and making progress on it. There is a very high level of mutual respect right now between Aaron Bradshaw and the Kentucky coaching staff about how they've handled this very delicate situation. And there will be a reward. The payoff is going to be that Aaron Bradshaw is going to be playing sooner, very, very soon. I am not willing to say that he's going to play in November. I'm not willing to say that yet. I feel comfortable in saying early December. I do. But understand that if you don't need him right this very minute because of the way Trey Mitchell's playing, because of the way everything else is working around him, be patient with it. Let him come back on his own pace. And when he comes back, play him 10 minutes, play him 12 minutes. You do not need him to be a high minute, you know, high volume type of guy yet. Let him ease into this because there are still potentially 35 games left in the season. You need him for game 40, not 6.
So here'd be my thing too. Yes, I know Kentucky has rebounding concerns right now. John Calipari knows it too. Everybody that's watching this team knows that they need size. Do we realistically think that he could walk in here in a week and grab a high number of rebounds in a game against Miami and play a ton of minutes? It's not possible. Like, the way that this is going, there's a transition, there's a time, there's a period here that this is going to be steps. The same way we're talking about steps to how this team is taking steps to be what it's going to be, this is included in those steps. And this is something that you don't want to run the risk of aggravating something or having a setback. You want to ease him into this because the way that we're seeing – so these guys that we're watching on the floor right now have been playing and on the court and active and beating and banging against one another since June. He hasn't. When he gets back out there, there's going to be a lot of excitement in his game that he's going to have to channel, and he's going to have, I think, getting his way in there, Jack, he's going to have some moments where he's going to provide a really good spark for a couple minutes. And then probably comes out, and then he gets another spark. And then at some point, the minutes climb. And then Kentucky starts to figure out how it wants to play. But for anyone that even if he was able to play a week from now that expects something crazy and like a huge, huge impact from him, you're just asking too much. You need, there's got to be time here. And I still think Kentucky's good enough to go win that game with its current roster right now. I do.
Yeah. So I appreciate the excitement for Bradshaw. And, you know, I know he's already been active in practice. And, you know, I hope Sisk is right. You know, I hope that tomorrow is the day that he starts 5-5. I have not personally heard that, but he's already been doing enough elsewhere that it's like, whether it's tomorrow or Thursday or Friday or Monday, like, he's been already doing stuff and getting himself ready. I mean, he's that hasn't been in question. My only concern is, when are they going to be willing to take the plunge, take the, all right, now it's time. Let's go. I would feel comfortable. And you know, if it's earlier than that, then I'm happy to be wrong, because it means that we get to see this awesome player sooner rather, you know, before expectations. I've just heard December, you know, early December as the loose timeline, and I'm going to kind of stick with that. You know, hope that we see him earlier and hoping that the ramp up is better. But the fact that we don't need him right now, and knowing the extent of the injury and the severity of it, I think that matters infinitely more than the value that he'd bring to the table against Marshall or even Miami for that matter. Let's just be patient with him. He'll be back on the floor. I think all that really matters out of all this is you can, I think, officially put the spring and early summer speculation to bed that Bradshaw won. Like, there was that internal battle that we talked about where, you know, there was not a lot of, you know, I talked about this on KS board earlier today that, yeah, those concerns were valid. Like the talk of Clutch not wanting him to come in and play at Kentucky, I think it was very, very real. I know it was very real. I was having the direct conversations with some people involved. Like, I know for a fact that there was some hesitancy on his side, trusting Cal to put him in position to be a, you know, top 5, top 10 pick, because there had not been a sample size of Cal letting a big play like that really ever. But look at what this team's doing right now, the pace they're playing with, averaging 90 points a game, making 12 threes a game, shooting 40% from three, a true 5-out system where, Sean, your most valuable player is Trey Mitchell right now. You can have AB step right into that role and be a 7'2" version of that, making shots, making the right reads, being a lob threat and all that. That's the exciting part that, you know, I think the buy-in is now there, even on their side. I've been told there's a great, you know, very strong, positive working relationship with Clutch, and there's no, you know, not going to be any lingering issues with that. This is, you know, we're all in. Like, this is chips in with Aaron Bradshaw playing for Kentucky, and we're going to see the rewards of that very, very soon.
Yep. What do you think about going rapid fire here for about 5 minutes with some fan questions in the chat as we close? Since we were late tonight, let's give back here.
Let's
get some questions rolling in here. And, you know, Daniel, you can throw some up on the screen as you see some good ones popping up. But no, like for where this team is right now, and hey, Feast Week is off to a great start. I mean, you got some great college basketball matchups going around, and definitely excited about this college basketball season and where things are going. And I think the overall excitement right now, Jack, about this team is just, I mean, it's off the charts right now, like the positivity and stuff. And yeah, they don't have bigs, and people are concerned and wondering if Z is going to be eligible and if Bradshaw is going to be back and when Zugo going to return. Is Tyler Ulis or John Shire? I'll tell you this, Tyler Ulis is very, very important. And just go watch the final. Everybody that's in this chat right now, or everybody that's going to watch this episode, do yourself a favor and go watch the final 4 minutes of regulation, but even the final five, the final five in overtime. And pay attention to Tyler Ulis on the bench. He's not just sitting there, Jack. He's coaching. And I'm seeing a guy that's confident this time around at Kentucky that is more active within his role, that is being a voice on the sideline. And like I said, DJ Wagner made a Tyler Ulis play. Just go make a play.
That's a blast. All right, let's roll through some of these. What do you think about the chance UK gets AJ DeBanza in 25? Good. I think Kentucky's in a very good spot with him. I think that Kentucky understands the generational talent that he is. I think it's a great idea to offer Tyron Stokes at the same time, who is also considering a reclass. We've talked in the past that we'll see, you know, physically he's going to be there. He just got some academic work to take care of. They're friends. They are teammates at Prolific Prep. They would like to play together. I would keep an eye on that. And Kentucky loves Tyron Stokes to death. So we'll see what happens there. Building, as Cal said, 24 is really in a good spot, but they're building something even better and more special in 25. So I think AJ DeBanta is a very significant part of that. Elevate podcast, Big Z updates, and JJ and Papaw 2020 Uganda news. Heard Uganda is still progressing the right way. I know that he's kind of been the odd man out, and I still have my, you know, some of my fit concerns about Ugo, but I did hear some, you know, solid things about him today, even just that, you know, he's progressing in the right way and they're still expecting him to play at some point. I just don't know what that looks like. I think that's going to be the bigger question, but, we'll see on Ugo. I just, you know, he's one of those guys that I just kind of have to see to believe just how that fit will be. But there's still confidence around the program that he can, you know, live up to his recruiting ranking and be the, you know, dynamic shot blocking threat that they kind of brought him in to be a truly elite rim running guy. So I'm rooting for him. And he's a great kid and great. You know, I really think he can be successful. The fit is one of my concerns. We'll see what happens there. Big Z, didn't hear any major updates on him. Still very, you know, he has not been cleared today, which was kind of, you know, what I asked. And when I kind of tried to dig a little bit, it kind of became a above my pay grade. I don't know. When that comes across our table, that's when we're going to address it. By then, you know, we've been going back and forth with the NCAA from the beginning with it. They have thought from the beginning that the pitch and argument has been outstanding and they gave enough to have him be declared eligible. And I think that's where the confidence comes from, is like, bro, we're seeing across NCAA, there are so many other pieces that are being declared eligible where they had more question marks than Z did. Adaimara at UCLA, UK turned down that opportunity to go after him because they were concerned he was going to get denied eligibility by the NCAA and then pivoted to Big Z. So like that's why they went with him, because they felt really good about his eligibility and felt like the guesswork had been taken out of that, to take a page out of our friend at Game Time's book. So I feel good about it. It just sucks that we have not heard any substantial updates beyond, I don't know. We'll see. It depends on when it comes across our door. So I wish I had something better, but I really don't. I'm going to continue to say that I feel good because they have felt good from the beginning. And that's unfortunately all I got, Sean.
Yeah. And we had a question there a moment ago about the SEC ACC challenge, and that is coming up. That's the Kentucky Miami game. And, you know, Duke heads to Bud Walton Arena to play Arkansas. And I mean, you got great games all around the SEC and ACC. To be the first year of that event, I think it's pretty big for the SEC to make a statement. And those events like that, Jack, are where, you know, Selection Sunday, when it comes down to how the league is evaluating stuff and how it performs, a lot of it is viewed in how they perform in non-conference. And I think that's an opportunity for some of these teams to get some wins. North Carolina and Tennessee, like the top half of the league's got some big time matchups and a chance to make a statement in those games. I mean, Arkansas did lose at Bud Walton, and Missouri has had some losses, and there are some other losses around the league right now that don't look good. You got a South Carolina team that's won some games early in the season. Mississippi State broke into the top 25 this week of the AP poll. Like, it's a deep league, but they need some wins. I know Texas A&M won on the road at Ohio State earlier this year. Like, that's a good win for the league. So get some good wins and stockpile them and just continue to build your resume and reputation. And I think that's an event that you can do it in.
Matt G, is Pilgrim Jr. hearing from UK yet? I will say I was actually very appreciative of the amount of people that, you know, that I've kind of leaned on a little bit for information in the past and, you know, building relationships with, that reached out to me after baby Billy was born and said, you know,
congratulated me for him, you know, and we talked about, I joke with a couple of them, you know, he's going to be the easiest recruit you'll ever sign, you know, so little things like that, just, you know, being stupid. But I have appreciated that. Yeah. That, so yes, technically he has heard from Kentucky, which is kind of cool to say as a dad, which is stupid because the, you know, the odds of him ever playing at Kentucky are slim to none, but hey, I'm going to dream big and reach for the stars as well.
He's going to play for me wherever I'm at though.
There we go. Well, I'll take that as long as you can offer him a full ride scholarship and I do not have to pay for his tuition. I'm all the way for it. Connor Rigg with Darren Peterson, Jaden Quaintance, AJ DeBansa, Tyron Stokes, and Jasper Johnson be the best starting five in the Cal era. It sure as heck be up there, man, because you have two, as Cal talked about Jaden Quaintance being a prodigy, you have AJ DeBansa, who for my money is the best generational talent in high school basketball right now. Tyron Stokes, who is a physical freak of nature, bowling ball athlete who can pass, dribble, and shoot. Like, he's a basketball player at its core. Jasper Johnson's awesome. He does a lot of really interesting, fun, you know, poised, patient things as a basketball player. I love him to death. And Darren Peterson is, he'd be Cal's best pure scoring guard since Malik Monk. Like, That's a freaking squad right there. So I am rooting for that to unfold more than just about everything. Zach Bingman, would you prefer to take 1 year of no drama with Peterson and 25 or 2 years of drama if Peterson reclassified, not knowing if he returns, hurting you with other recruits because they think he comes back? It's a great point. Heard today actually two completely different things about Darren Peterson. Somebody told me that I absolutely trust that Kentucky is wasting its time going after BJ Edgecombe and they should go all in on Darren Peterson reclassing for 24 and that they think it's feasible and that he wants to be at Kentucky. Another person who's actually closer to the program told me that Darren is leaning towards staying in 25 and they do feel better about BJ Edgecombe and they're going to pursue that and see where things go there. As you see, Cal was there visiting him today. So Cal and this staff have been very calculated with where they've been recruiting and not really listening to the narratives. Look at the Boozer twins, for example. I mean, that's one that everybody told them that you're stupid for going after. And they said, you know what? We're going to give it our shot. And they're right there in the thick of things. I think Miami leads for them, but I would put Kentucky ahead of Duke in that one. Like, I think they're right there for kids that everybody kind of scoffed at for them even trying. So they're kind of going against the grain with a lot of these guys, and I think it's going to pay off. We'll see what happens with the BJ Edgecombe, but I do think the differing opinions on Darren Peterson about the win, I think everybody knows Kentucky's in a good spot with them, but it's just the win is more of the question. This one's for you. We'll get out of here. We'll do two more minutes of it. Where does Thero fit when the bigs get back? Is he still the starting four, Sean?
That's the tricky thing right now is that's the spot that I'm actually looking at just because the way Kentucky plays offensively and the spacing that it's playing with and the three-point shooting, there's a couple of times the ball's being swung to him and he's wide open and then just tries to drive it because, like, obviously it's not his game to shoot the three. So, but no, he plays the game so hard. He's rebounding his tail off. He's impacting the game and trying to do whatever it takes for this team and helping, especially with a team that's undersized right now. I just wonder, with the way they're playing offensively, if Bradshaw is definitely going to get minutes, Trey Mitchell is still going to be one of the most played guys on this team in his minutes and stuff. It's just going to be some at the four and some at the five. So I think that a Adu's role could – I don't think his role is going to change, but maybe the minutes distribution does. But I think he's still going to be a part of that rotation and play because his physicality. And I want to see – there's going to have to be guys emerge that become really good defenders. And I think that he could be a guy that can beat and bang with some of these forwards in the league and kind of create some problems and things. And we saw what he did against Kansas. Like, in the biggest moment, he was there. Against Miami, does he have another moment like that here in a week in big moments? Is that what he's known for? But he's another guy that has a willingness to do whatever it takes. So we also had a question from Brett about, is there any concerns about the three-point defense? Right now, I'm not too concerned about it. I want to see, like, that's the thing with the KenPom numbers and defensive stuff. Like, I want to evaluate Kentucky when it has a seven-footer. overall defensively. That's what I want to evaluate. I've seen enough offensively to know that I like what they're going to do. Defensively, I want to give them kind of the benefit of the doubt until they're at full strength with a seven-footer. And then the way they shoot the ball from three in practice, you got to be able to close out on your own dudes. So at some point, I think that this team will settle in there. But to me, the way they shoot the ball this year, it kind of cancels out some of the concerns a little bit more from three-point defense. But I think they will be okay as the season goes along. So, yes, Brett, I do answer your questions.
I like how somebody else, I think it was Matt G, said, I like how Jack just completely skips the questions that are on the board right now. He's just going down the list. I didn't even notice that Daniel was putting them on the screen. I was just going through, reading them one by one. And apparently just been missing the questions at all. I'm telling you, I am on just drowning with this baby, with just the sleep schedule. I literally got home from Rupp Arena last night at 2:30 in the morning. Didn't get to fall asleep till 3:00 in the morning. Woke back up, had baby appointment today. Was dealing with all this news and recruiting stuff coming out. AJ DeBance to get an offer. I mean, I've been working the phones all day. I am like dead. I am just dead, all around dead. So just bear with me, man. I'm trying my hardest, but God, man, this is a lot. I know I said I was going to be done. I'll do like two more. I'll answer some quick ones. BBN, MJ, my guy, Billy Richmond and Carter Knox update. A couple of guys asked about both of those. Randy Childress, Carter Knox news. I was told today that Kentucky's still very, very much going for Carter Knox. They just kind of understand that he's playing this one patient and wanting to wait till the spring. They know how dad operates. They literally signed his son and won that recruiting battle the first time around, so they know how that one works. They just know that we can't go all in on him and then miss on him. So let's go on and go for Billy Richmond. Let's go on and go for VJ Edgecombe. Let's continue to monitor a reclass from Darren Peterson. Let's just continue to weigh all of our options as he's taking visits and exploring his other options. Let's do the same. And, you know, if we meet up in the spring, that's a great fit. And they like how he's playing in that Overtime Elite. That's a pipeline that Kentucky's really trying to maximize. So that's a fit. It's just about the timing more than anything. If they sign somebody before then, about Billy Richmond, nothing has changed. Kentucky's right there. I think we should hear on that sooner rather than later. I would be shocked if we get out of the winter without news on Billy Richmond. And I think Kentucky's in a really good spot. I certainly, heck, would not trade Kentucky spot with anybody else. So keep a close eye on that one. I'm still feeling very, very good about that one. But I think it's going to be Billy and one of the other three guys. We'll see what happens there. Any other last second ones you want to get to, Sean, real quick?
I was looking to see, because I think they've kind of slowed down in the last few minutes.
Yeah, I think we hit good. This one, I'll do this one for you. FT, UT or Purdue for the second half? What's your call?
What is it right now? I'm not even.
I don't know. It's going to be so dated. Like, the people that listen to this tomorrow, the game's going to be already over. So the second half really doesn't matter. But, you know,
I liked Tennessee going into the game. Let's see here.
While you do that, Titanium Titans has anything to watch for versus Marshall. Orlando Antigua tonight on Cal's radio show went in depth about Marshall and what to expect from them. Basically said that they do a lot of the same stuff St. Joseph's does, that they're a high-octane, high-volume three-point shooting team that has size that's going to make life difficult for Trey Mitchell while also knocking down threes. So basically the same scouting report that we saw for Kentucky against St. Joseph's. I think we're going to see a very similar situation there on Friday night. So still very early before, you know, really digging into the nuts and bolts of Marshall, but be prepared for another three-point barrage, Sean.
Yeah, for sure. Like, teams coming into Rupp Arena getting even hotter than what they are before they get there. That seems to be a trend this year, and we know Kentucky will be challenged in different ways. They were in a tight game today, and I didn't see the outcome of theirs, but I know early in the second half they were in a close one. For the question about Tennessee, though, and we'll see here in about 45 minutes, but I think Tennessee wins one against Purdue tonight. I think that they make the plays down the stretch and win that game. I've obviously not been following the flow of that game, but with Tennessee, I picked them going into the game to win that one outright. So I'll stick with it. It's a close one. And you got another one coming up tonight, Kansas and Marquette. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got two top 10 games going on in Maui right now. And I watched UCLA play last night as well and put up a fight against Marquette. And then Marquette just made game-winning plays down the stretch. So Marquette's a good basketball team. It wouldn't shock me at all if Kansas suffer, if number one goes down for the first time tonight.
Oh, goodness gracious. It was a long one. We apologize for being late, but, you know, when your power goes out and you have to reconvene at KS Bar and
I think I shut this place down, by the way. I don't know what's going on here.
You know, it is what it is. We responded by going 20 minutes over, so I hope fans can at least appreciate that. We appreciate everybody that stuck around from start to finish. It was a fun show. Plenty of good stuff that we got to, and appreciate all of our sponsors as always. They are the absolute best. So, Sean, let's go ahead and get out of here before our own feast week. It's going to be Thanksgiving Thursday, then Marshall on Friday. Where can fans find your work?
You can follow me on Twitter at GBBCountry.
Find me on Twitter as well at JackPilgrimKSR. Go subscribe to on KSR Plus. We're doing a lot of fun stuff over there. The message board was popping today, talking about all sorts of old rumors and speculation and, you know, gossip. It was a lot of fun over there on the message board today. So make sure you go subscribe over there. The deals are just out of this world. You do not want to miss that. Last question, Maggi, who's the leading scorer versus Marshall, Sean? That's the last thing I ask of you.
Ooh. Man, I'm trying to think here. So they've had DJ's led them, Antonio's led them, Reed's led them. I'm going to say Justin Edwards breaks through and has a night.
Ooh, I like it.
Showing that balance.
I will go with I'm going Trey Mitchell. He's emerging as the MVP for this team. I think that's going to continue with a Trey Mitchell Black Friday breakthrough performance. Well, he's already broken through, so continuing to break through for Trey Mitchell. Let's go ahead. Get out of here. Appreciate each and every one of you. We will see you next time.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.